All right, back on the Young Turks. Jake Huger, John Iarola, Brett Ehrlich.
Wow.
Okay, look at this.
Yes, you are sandwiched by plaids.
A plaid sandwich, indeed. That made me slightly uncomfortable. Okay, we're moving forward. Captain Jingle Pants writes in, Americans are disappointed in Trump, but imagine how disappointed the Russians are. Those sanctions don't lift themselves. That's a great point. And by the way, you know, that's part of my one of my pieces of speculation here. There's things I know, they colluded. There's things I don't know, was it a crime? And one of the things I don't know, but I speculate on, is that the Donald Trump Jr. meeting was for kompromat, was so that they would have an ability to blackmail Trump later. Trump and the Russian and Putin just met, and Trump still has not been able to lift the sanctions. As I told you today in the first hour, Isikoff reporting they were trying to lift the sanctions from day one when they came into the White House, but they couldn't do it. And the Congress fought him on it, the State Department leftover officials fought him on it, and the whole government fought him on it. And so it might have been that Putin was like, look, I told you to lift this, you still haven't lifted them. All right, fine. Let's see how this goes. Here's the Don Trump Jr. meeting. That's just an appetizer.
Well, supposedly it was leaked by people in the White House. That's what I heard.
So here's what I had to say to that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's why it's called speculation.
That is a possibility. Well, why don't we transition to something sort of related?
Almost, hold.
Why don't we not?
Okay, because I have so many more fun tweets. Okay, real quick, Gabby Morita, Trump and his cronies have a better working relationship with the Russian government than they do with the US government. Sad but true, sad baby. Okay, let me go all the way to Christie because these are fun ones. Mugatu says, Christie's utter and constant humiliation is the only part of Trump I enjoy. Deborah, New York City says, Trump is fat and disgusting looking. He's the last person who should be discriminating based on looks. Yeah, that's Deborah's opinion, probably a fair one. If I was going around saying, I won't hire that guy, he's overweight. Yeah, then I think it would be fair to open the door to criticism on me on my appearance. All right.
Was it a golf outfit at the time or?
All right. And then Penguin Nick's news says, geez, so it wasn't the bridge or the beach trip that ended Christie's career. It was offering a germaphobe to a user's phone.
I love it. That was my favorite interaction of all time. I just like when they drop F-bombs at each other behind the scenes, whether or not. Like, I believe it. I believe it happened, even if I'm not sure it happened. You know? Like, I buy that interaction happened. I actually hope that it's happening all the time. That's why I like Veep so much.
Yeah. No, the cursing is no question about it. And he is a germaphobe. And with inside sources, it depends on how many sources you have, and you're never positive that it went down exactly that way. But the Christie story and the Manafort story that I just told you at the end of the second hour, based on Bloomberg Businessweek reporting, it seems very like them, let's put it that way.
If he's such a big germaphobe though, the P tape seems less likely.
Well, no, by the way, that's part of why I didn't believe it in the first place.
No, guys, he watches Naked and Afraid. He knows that it comes out sterile, he's fine.
It is sterile, that is true.
That happens, okay. Watch Survivor, man.
Maybe the hotel was full of jellyfish.
There you go, yeah.
Gotta kill the pain. Okay,
people.
Why don't we transition into this, a little quick update for you. We're all aware that a couple weeks ago, Donald Trump had his first big sit-down meeting with Vladimir Putin. It went massively longer than they expected it to, over 2 hours of talking until finally Melania Trump had to go in and try to shut it down. So that's the meeting that we know about, found out today actually. From a political scientist and president of the Eurasia Group, Ian Bremmer, who told Charlie Rose that there was actually a second meeting that hadn't previously been disclosed that happened after some sort of state dinner that was held. The dinner happened and then Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin met for what amount of time that we don't currently know yet. The content of the conversation we don't currently know yet. And what action might be taken based on that conversation we don't currently know yet.
But it is interesting that they did not reveal it earlier. So, look. There's plenty of meetings that people don't know about because they're unimportant. A meeting between the US president and the leader of Russia, when everybody's talking about whether Russia and the US president have a deal that they don't announce to other people, and they do after a 2-hour and 15-minute meeting, raises questions. So what was the thing they wanted to talk about off the record that they didn't want anyone else to know about.
I would just caution, I mean, if they really wanted to have a super secret meeting, then a political scientist wouldn't have seen it. They wouldn't have met up on the sidelines after dinner. That sounds more like, because we know after that meeting, there was all this speculation from both sides about what was said at the meeting, what wasn't said at that first meeting. It's possible one of them wanted to follow up based on those revelations.
Here's the reason I don't agree with you, is because in every James Bond movie where there's a super secret installation, who's milling about in the background? Scientists. They have access to everything.
That is true.
But these are both excellent points.
Thank you.
But remember that one of the people involved is named Donald Trump. You think he's going to be savvy enough to be like, no, 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 let's make sure that nobody sees this. Remember, he decided on military strikes in the middle of Mar-a-Lago with guests milling around taking pictures of secret documents.
That's true. And like I said, we don't know what was discussed at the meeting. We do know, we can sort of speculate about what the intent was. We know Donald Trump bought Vladimir Putin some furniture. So he had something on his mind.
He wanted to move on him maybe, like Mitch McConnell.
Okay, why don't we turn to some somewhat related news concerning the State Department. Under Rex Tillerson, the State Department might be taking a big step back from two of its traditional responsibilities and priorities. Now, the first area is something that's not particularly relevant these days. It's cybersecurity. I don't know if anybody's familiar with it. But they both lost a high-ranking executive, and this might not be the end of their losses in that area. Christopher Painter, the Trump administration's top cyber diplomat, is going to be leaving the State Department at the end of the month. And there's a lot of positive commentary about Christopher Painter coming out of the State Department. Jason Healy, Columbia University senior cyber researcher, says Chris has been a tireless defender of American interests in cyberspace, flying hundreds of thousands of miles a year to push our views of freedom online. Now, that by itself is possibly might harm the State Department's ability to conduct cyber diplomacy, but people go into their jobs, people leave their jobs. But as I said, it might not be the end of it. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is considering closing the cyber office or merging it with another office and downgrading the cyber coordinator's rank, according to a source familiar with internal planning. The source added that Tillerson was also considering, quote, limiting the number of people who work on cybersecurity at state. It's clear they're thinking about reorganizing it, the source said. Clearly, they don't think it's that important.
Yeah, I would think that right now is the time when it's important. So look, sometimes the US government way overreaches on these issues. And under the guise of cybersecurity, they actually do intrusions on our privacy, let alone the world leaders and all the things that we've discovered that the US is doing. And world leaders spying in on them, I have actually both under Bush, Obama, Trump, I get it, that's part of spying. And I actually defend them on that to a large degree. But spying on innocent US citizens, I'm not in favor. This, on the other hand, is a different matter. So at a moment where everyone is concerned, oh my God, a foreign country that is not an ally might have meddled in our elections. And the part of the story that doesn't get enough coverage, everything else gets plenty of coverage, but the one that doesn't is that they did try to get voter information. And from in a couple of instances, they succeeded. That doesn't mean that they hacked the vote, but they at least got voter info. And they are perilously close to actually hacking the vote. And then Trump proposes to do a cybersecurity joint effort partnership with Russia. That's mental. Those are the guys who are just hacking and not only got the DNC emails, apparently based on our top intelligence agencies, but also, again, potentially going after our vote. Those are the very last guys you were doing a cybersecurity deal with. Now, that was so preposterous on his face that even the Republican senators were like, are you mental? We're not gonna, of course we're not gonna do that. He's like, oh yeah, yeah, I was just kidding. I didn't mean that, right? And right afterwards, Rex Tillerson, former CEO of ExxonMobil, who had the deal with the Russians in the first place, a $500 billion deal on oil exploration that the sanctions affected, then comes out and goes, cybersecurity. Okay, now that we can't partner up with Russia to give them access to all of our information, maybe we just don't do any cybersecurity. So it's not to end all of our cybersecurity programs across the government. But in what Rex Tillerson can control, the State Department, It's like, let's power down on that security stuff.
Yeah. Fold it into other parts of the apparatus, reorganize it. Like, I don't think the decision to reorganize any given department implies that they're not taking it seriously. I just think that in every other context, like a shakeup, yes. If you coupled that with you say this, we're reorganizing this part of it, and we have a plan moving forward, and it is this, or we have this person that we're eyeing to replace it. That's one thing, but this does seem like it's like, let's just fold it into this other arm and put it over here, and then never talk about it again. There is no follow-up statement about why they're doing it, how they're doing it. Just seems to be unfolding.
Yeah, from time to time, the government tries to become more efficient. You remember Al Gore famously, when he was vice president under Clinton, did a restructuring of the government, tried to eliminate bureaucracy. And then there is this kind of getting rid of people from a certain department, shutting it down, etc. Like Scott Pruitt at the EPA saying, right, do we really need so many people to figure out if our air is really that clean or our water is that clean? No, let's just kind of get rid of those guys. There's a reason why he's doing that, because he wants to let the guys who pollute get away with it, because that's they do donations. And in this case, this is a very important matter and a very timely issue. There is no other excuse for powering down right now.
And Rex Tillerson has faced accusations since the very beginning, both from the outside and from people inside of the State Department, saying that he hasn't staffed it sufficiently, that the halls are, it's like a ghost town in there. People don't feel like their work is used for anything, but also that there's simply far fewer people actually working in the State Department. So you have this potential area, it could be another example of that, of sort of stepping back from an area where the US exercised some global leadership on trying to establish these cyber norms and things like that. But we have a second as well. I'm gonna be jumping ahead to graphic 27 here. So this is a different area, not cybersecurity related. Several former US officials told Foreign Policy recently that Todd Buchwald, the special coordinator in the Office of Global Criminal Justice, was recently told by Tillerson's office that he was being reassigned to a new position in a different department. The remaining staff of the OGCJ may also be reassigned, according to Foreign Policy. If you're not familiar with that particular office, it deals with issues surrounding war crimes and genocide and helps form policy to address those atrocities. So they might be winding that office down as well. So you have the cybersecurity of war crimes and genocide, two areas where theoretically the United States should be involved and engaged, might not be taking up much of a leadership role in the world in the years to come.
So if you remember the Donald Trump Jr. meeting with the Russian lawyer, who can forget it? I mean, we've been talking about it, the whole country's been talking about it for at least a week. One of the things that the Russian lawyer wanted to meet up with was the law that we passed saying that we're gonna freeze the assets of some Russian oligarchs because of human rights violations and fraud in Russia, including the killing of one of the guys who was investigating that fraud. Yeah. So now Rex Tillerson and Donald Trump go meet with Putin. Tillerson comes back and goes, well, let's, you know, ixnay on the cybersecurity, okay. And by the way, human rights, who needs them?
In addition, the law passed in Russia to kind of fight back against this is an adoption law. And so if you look at the meeting that was had between Trump Jr. and the Russian side, they say, listen, it wasn't about these kinds of things, anything important. They just started talking about adoptions. Well, that is important. The adoption, it was reported in the New York Times, is frequently the kind of takes a place in discussions for sanctions by and large.
Yeah, but it's not like the Russians care about the adoption part. No. We care about the adoption part because we want
babies.
We want babies. And by the way, I mean, imagine you're born in the middle of Siberia and you're an orphan and you have a chance to come to America, but they ended that because they don't care about that, right? But what they care about is don't freeze our assets. That is ill-gotten gain that we would like to keep ill-gotten and on our side. So now all of a sudden, you know, we say, the thing that we freezed it over, the human rights, we're gonna power that down too. And finally, if you wanted to help Russia, what would you do? You would power down on cybersecurity. You would look to lift the sanctions. Another story out in Yahoo News today from Michael Isikoff saying they wanted to lift the Russian sanctions on day one. The Trump administration did. You'd bring in their friend Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State. You would stop caring about their human rights violations. You would do a ceasefire in Syria that would cement their ally Assad's lead. Have I missed anything yet? And the other thing you would do is you would gut our State Department so that we couldn't even keep track of what Russia was up to. And our State Department would look like a ghost town and not be able to respond to the Russians.
It is just incredibly, the first day thing, like there's politicians love to throw out, here's what I'm gonna do in my first day, here's what I'm gonna do in my first 100 days. And like if you were president, you'd probably have this long list of things you'd love to see passed on the first day. But let's say that you really just wanted to have a better relationship with Russia. There's no deal or anything. You just want a better relationship with them, fine. But first day, would that really be one of the first priorities you had was lifting sanctions that the president put on formerly? That is incredibly weird.
Also,
okay, regardless of what else you think is true in this entire thing, that is suspicious.
Also, in exchange for what if you're such a great negotiator? Like, what do you get in exchange?
Yeah, what have we gotten?
From a you know, populist perspective, if that's what his like thrust is for America First, put the jobs first, it isn't. But in these kinds of, you know, ease sanctions, it's the money that goes specifically to the oligarchs and the folks that would know how to leverage the easing of sanctions and profit from it in Siberia, you know, like in those kinds of oil rich locations.
Exactly.
Yeah. So look, the good news is they're so brazen that if they keep going like this, they're gonna get caught. I mean, they're barely hiding it.
Yeah.
I would argue Donald Trump Jr. did not. But anyway, okay, why don't we take our first break? We got some totally different stuff coming up after the break.
We do, including a Game of Thrones controversy, and then a Winnie the Pooh controversy relating to China, which is hilarious. You're gonna love that story.
And then a robot controversy.
Yeah, but the whole time as we're doing serious stories in this segment, I was thinking of our nickname for this panel. You know, so when Ben and Anna do the show together, it's Banana Hour. Mm-hmm. When Ben, Anna, and John do it, it's Banana Pie Hour.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Which is delicious.
So John's from Think Tank, Brett's from Pop Trigger. So I was playing around. I'm like, Think Trigger, Pop Tank, Tank Trigger? And then I was like, no, I got it. They're both wearing plaid like lumberjacks. It's the Lumberjank Hour.
Lumberjank Hour.
Okay, that ended up not being bad.
Yeah, I was like, listen, the end of Pop Trigger, you just don't want to put in anything.
That's a fair point. Jeez. All right, hashtag Lumberjank. We'll be right back. Back on TYT, John, Brett, and myself. James Harris writes in, my 75-year-old mother thinks Brett is awesome.
Hey, thanks. That's my demo.
Tom Sawaki writes in with an alternate name for this panel. This section of TYT should be named Between Two Beards. That does go along with our lumberjank theme that we're building. Kaylee and Babcock says about the State Department shutting down cybersecurity or building it with the Russians. I don't see the problem. If Russia designs a security system and reassures us that they can't break into it, what could go wrong?
They'd know.
I just want an assurance that our passwords aren't all just going to be password. Like, do they have that sophisticated a plan going forward?
I think it was Big Head in Silicon Valley whose username was password. And his password was password.
Sounds about right.
We should do that poll. Who's dumber, Big Head or Donald Trump?
Wow, I didn't watch it.
Okay. You're crazy not to watch it.
It's supposed to be great. That and Breaking Bad.
Okay. And finally, Amber the Brave writes in. Oh, I should do the members of the day, by the way. Ashton Cole and Deb Sherman are the members of the day. Members make this show possible, even though you're all free riders and loafers this month because mm-hmm. you're getting free trial membership for a whole month. Kidding aside, tytnetwork.com/join. Get all the network shows and the whole Young Turk show, 2 hours ad-free anytime you want, plus the postgame, which we're going to do in a minute. I'm going to cover some real stories actually in the post game. So stories I wanted to get to that we didn't get a chance to. So anyway, free this month. So when you go to tytnetwork.com/join, type in free TYT as the promo code and you'll get it free for a whole month. Check it out. So Amber the Brave wrote in, if this controversial Game of Thrones thing involves Ed Sheeran, why is everybody hating on Ed? Well, we're going to have your answer.
Holy crap, it is. Instant okay, why don't we talk about that then? On the premiere episode of Game of Thrones this season, the singer from the UK, Ed Sheeran, had a little cameo appearance with Maisie Williams playing Arya Stark. Let's bring up a picture. You're gonna see the singer. A little bit dark there. It's the woods after all. And fun trivia fact, the world that Game of Thrones is set on does not have a moon, so it would actually be much darker at the night. But if we go ahead to the next one, you're gonna see another picture. Them like laughing along. So he had two lines after singing a little bit. In fact, Brett Ehrlich identified him based on the voice before he actually showed his face on the show. And you might think, oh, that's interesting, a little cameo. They've done it before with singers, not as high profile necessarily, but they've had singers on. But a lot of people were not having it. And there was this uproar online that a celebrity would dare to have a cameo appearance like Ed Sheeran. And it is believed to be related to that Ed Sheeran actually took himself off of Twitter. Now, of course, this is not actually the first time that that's happened. A few months back, he said this: "I've actually come off Twitter completely. I can't read it. I go on it and there's nothing but people saying mean things. One comment ruins your day, but that's why I've come off of it." His comment about nothing but people saying mean things, we've looked into it and it's actually true. No. Now he has recently been back on it.
Idiot.
He doesn't actually read it, he says, but he does tweet. However, his account did go down after the uproar over his appearance.
So I have a lot of things to say about this.
Yes.
All right. Number one, so when John was saying that Brett called it while we're watching it live, you might be thinking, what did we do? We all watch it live? Actually, we do. So and you guys can watch it with us. So we covered on What the Flick. So what every week what we're doing is watching it. We can't show it to you, of course, but you watch it at home and we watch it here and we do basically play by play, but we talk very little there because it's Game of Thrones. Be cool.
Yeah, right.
Right. But Brett did say while we're watching it live, is that Ed Sheeran?
No, I said, that's Ed Sheeran. That wasn't a question, there was no question. When you hear the dulcet tones of that ginger gent.
So Anna was here, Matt Atchity, Ben Mankiewicz, and all of us were here. And we watch it in the studio, and then we do a review of it immediately thereafter. So go to youtube.com/whattheflickshow to catch all those reviews when we're doing it live, and afterwards you can see our review of game one. Okay, now on this. Why are people upset at this?
I have no idea.
I love Game of Thrones. We've been reviewing it all these years. I can't love it anymore. Why? I don't even understand.
People love Ed Sheeran. He's a great singer.
So he doesn't have haters.
I mean, people have haters on Ed Sheeran. Everybody has haters online, as you mentioned. But I think it was the way in which his cameo played out. It was the like... freeze on Ed Sheeran. And then for me, I was just picturing all the times they just did like, all right, Ed, say your line five times different ways. Mm-hmm. It may as well have had like a marquee with neon lights going, Ed Sheeran, tonight only.
See, it really?
It takes you completely out of it. Now, it was a moment. It was a short moment. I think people are overreacting. And he was, his voice when I hear it takes me back to being a kid. I don't know why. I was like 30 when he became popular. but it is that moment of like, there are a lot of famous people who have cameos on Game of Thrones. But I haven't yet seen it in such a way that takes you completely out of it. Like when I saw Swergin. Ian McShane.
Yeah.
When he did his cameo, it was like, yes, I'm going. He's an actor.
So it's different.
He's an actor from an HBO show. I'm so into it. And they do that all the time. But with Ed Sheeran, it was like, he was there to sing well.
Well, he did.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I don't think that you are qualified to talk about this because you know who Ed Sheeran is. Now, I am the perfect test case because I prepped for this and I still barely know who he is. But going into the episode, I had never heard of this person before. He seemed like a fine singer. I thought it was actually a different group because of the singing.
Where have you been that you don't know who Ed Sheeran is?
I'm worse
than him.
Anyway,
there's a point to it.
When you said it, I thought he was a country singer.
He might well be.
He could
but
be.
Anyway, but my point is that I didn't know who he was. And if you hadn't said anything, I don't think I would have thought there was anything weird. He's just some guy who sang and then had two lines. I don't think they focused on it too much. He looks like every other person that shows up in Game of Thrones.
Racist.
I don't understand that.
I don't know.
But anyway, let's get into why he might have been there before we return to the commentary. Now, his account was taken away, and then reports came that it was back, but they deleted all of his tweets, and he had less than 2,000 followers, down from like 19 million, which apparently means I should have known who he was.
Oh now, my God, looked, that dude had 19 million followers?
Apparently.
I feel so I'm looked one man up here.
I looked on Twitter and he's down to like 14 million. So I don't know what to believe anymore. But anyway, there's a reason why he showed up, and it's not just that he's famous, although it's related to that. David Benioff, one of the co-showrunners for Game of Thrones, said this, I believe it was a while ago. We knew that Maisie Williams was a big fan of Ed Sheeran, and for years we've been trying to get him on the show so we can surprise Maisie. This year we finally did it. Because Maisie is also from the UK and she's a teenage girl, and I assume that's like the Jonathan Taylor Thomas of the UK right now. I don't know. I'm dating myself. But anyway, she's probably crazy for him. It's a cool little surprise. He did a good job. What is the difference? Everybody get off his ass.
Okay. Yeah, leave him alone.
Okay, leave him alone. That's an old reference too. Okay, so I'm now beginning to see why. Because I'm with John, I didn't notice anything different. But if it was Beyonce, it might, you see what I'm saying? Like if all of a sudden we're like having a serious Game of Thrones moment.
Are you saying Ed Sheeran is Beyonce? I'm not going to sit here and take this.
No, I'm saying he's not. Oh, I'm saying if it was a really famous person.
Well, apparently he's pretty famous.
Right. And like Beyonce shows up in the middle of a Game of Thrones episode, I might be like a little distracted, right? So, okay. Anyway, the main thing I got out of this is Ed Sheeran is way too sensitive. Man, if you lived in our world,
I don't know. I think I could look. I am on Twitter. It is mostly people saying mean things because all they want to do is be mean, but they know that if they do it in person, they'll get punched in the face, and so they do it online.
By John.
But I kind of by me or by anyone else that they were mean to. But for the job. And for other unrelated things other than politics, I feel like I got to be on it. But I understand people who want to like protect their sanity by leaving it. He's not the only person. I think it's okay. If you don't want to be involved in that, you have no obligation to expose yourself to that sort of concentrated insanity.
Here's the thing. Ed Sheeran will do a cameo on The Simpsons, which is a show for cameos. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the Game of Thrones is a show for that kind of like, I was just on The Simpsons and Dancing with the Stars, and now I'm gonna do my cameo on Game of Thrones. It was strange. Though he is a super talented, extremely, despite what they say, and you probably know, extremely popular singer, nominated for the highest awards in the land of music.
Okay.
And anyway, I pardon everyone involved. And Ed, one comment should not ruin your day.
Right. Okay. It's probably a little more.
Yes.
By the way, I'm just worried that this sets a precedent where people won't want to do these sorts of cameos anymore. Because if you decide to surprise me with like a cameo where Emma Watson had a couple lines on TYT, I don't want you to feel like you can't do that.
All right.
Set it up.
Okay.
Come on.
Yeah. Any minute now.
Okay. Right. Do we want to quickly jump into this, or do we want to take our break a little bit early before?
No, we can't take it early. So give me a story we could do in 3.5 minutes.
Let's do Winnie the Pooh really fast. That's pretty quick, huh? If we get ready with a graphic P9 and actually start with 12.
And P90X. Okay.
This fall, China is going to hold its Communist Party Congress, and in advance of that, they're cracking down on online criticism of the president, Xi Jinping. Very particular sort of criticism, actually, although this is not the first time they've done it. They are cracking down on Winnie the Pooh memes. So let's show some of these pictures. You're gonna see a very famous one from a couple of years ago of the president and Barack Obama. and look, there's a little bit of a similarity there.
So good.
If you go, you see that in the bottom right, you're gonna see that's a social media site from China. Go on to the next one, again. You can sort of see what they're going for. And then the third one. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. But apparently they don't like that. They think that that's disrespectful. And China has a very burgeoning, rapidly growing social media sort of presence. Memes like this are becoming bigger and bigger. And they just think that it doesn't add to national harmony to be calling the president Winnie the Pooh.
You know that you're not living in a free country when and I'm afraid what this says about America, but when you start changing the laws because of the ego of the leader. So the same thing happens in Turkey, where if you know, if someone insults Erdogan, sometimes even in a different country. Remember when he got all worked up about the guy in Germany, the comedian in Germany, yeah, insulting him?
Or they went crazy over the protest in the US when he was here.
Yeah. And so and then in Thailand, if you insult the king, you get 15 years in prison. Dude, take a load off, man.
Yeah.
Relax a little bit. Let somebody make a little bit of fun with. This is not going to devolve in China. Don't worry. You still get to have rule the country.
Well, yeah. Why don't we test it? Because I know you generated a few of these.
Yeah,
huh?
There's a couple. The 100 Acre Wood is full of characters that are similar to world leaders. For example, Angela Merkel. Let's take a look. A little bit of rabbit in there.
I like it because
rabbit is like, dude, rabbit. She'll level with you in addition to being friendly.
Wise.
Speaking of wise, this one, just like the owl, King Salman of Saudi Arabia a little bit.
A little bit.
Look at the outfit, is the exact same,
by the way. It's the exact same.
Oh, that's a good point.
And then finally, beard? Piglet. Yeah.
Well, Brad, that'll get you banned in North Korea.
Yeah, darn doomed.
And you couldn't buy a beer in North Korea.
My computer got kidnapped in North Korea.
Well, apparently they also online do compare Vladimir Putin to Dobby from Harry Potter.
Oh, wow.
Theresa May to Cruella de Vil. And Donald Trump to just about everybody.
By the way, I would love to see, I would love to see that depiction of him. Go now. I wonder, did we make that? It's amazing.
Yeah, well, so here's what's not going to happen. This clip being shown in China.
Yeah. It's probably the case.
Okay. Anyway, it's okay, guys. It's okay to have a little fun and for people to make fun of your leaders. It makes you likable. Instead, you're going to crack down and just make yourself look actually
like
ridiculous.
A joke.
Yes. Yeah. For TYTnetwork.com audience, we'll be right back. Serious, we love you guys. We'll see you tomorrow. Elizabeth Rosario writes in, "My Lord, John, what rock have you been living under that you don't know Ed Sheeran?"
Thank you. I honestly couldn't tell you a song that Ed Sheeran has.
Fuzz
How long has Ed Sheeran been famous for?
5 years, solidly famous.
Okay, I would say the onus is on Ed Sheeran to show me how famous he is.
He's got like
now.
A song out now.
I'm on YouTube, okay?
Fell in love with an Englishman.
I've never heard of this person before.
I'll play some music for you and you will fall in love. With Edward.
Sam Smith.
Ed is he on the radio?
Similar? Yeah, he's on the radio. He's also like in the news for stuff like this.
I don't.
I've never.
The reason I don't know him is that I don't listen to radio anymore. Now that I have my favorite songs on my iPhone, I'm like, really? I gotta sit through ads, like, and then like 3.5 minutes of ads. Then I gotta listen to this asshole DJ.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can't stand it anymore.
I just listen to the Moana theme
you've
song.
You've heard his music before. You'll listen to a song and be like, oh, that's him. It's in everything.
Okay.
It's in commercials.
That's fair.
He did a music video where he was a Muppet.
Mm-hmm. That sounds lovely. How dare he? Okay, anyway, Ryan Zephyr says, I feel like I'm the only person on earth that doesn't watch Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Well, you should especially watch our reviews on What the Flake, but no, you're not the only person. J.R. Jackson also does not watch Game of Thrones.
There's several here, actually, who don't.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Lisette Padilla, who was just on Nerd Alert today, also has it. What's wrong with people? Okay, it's an awesome show. Anyway,
you're just doing it.
Why don't we jump back in the news?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. The Center for Investigative Reporting has discovered that the Trump administration plans to cut $213 million from a variety of teen pregnancy prevention programs that were established under Barack Obama. More than 80 organizations will lose Obama-era grants from the US Department of Health and Human Services that helped them fund programs for helping teens avoid unwanted pregnancies and sexually transmitted infections. Some of the organizations receiving the grants said that they were told that the move was brought forward by Valerie Huber, a new chief of staff to the Assistant Secretary for Health at HHS, who favors abstinence-only education instead of sexual health awareness. And if you go back and you search this name, a lot of quotes that are not just in favor of abstinence-only education, but to the exclusion of others are easy to find. She said this recently, as public health experts and policymakers, we must normalize sexual delay more than we normalize teen sex, even with contraception.
She also calls it sexual risk avoidance, not abstinence only.
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
That's where they get that, like, the thing they represent has been so thoroughly discredited that they desperately have to rename it. like the new classic liberals, for instance. Yeah, it sucks to be conservative, doesn't it? Anyway, but this is she's now in a position to make this sort of change. Theoretically, millions of dollars will be changed as a result of people like her being there, favoring a policy that we experienced under George W. Bush. You know, we had a long experience with that. Even though the NIH has said that abstinence education in the U.S. does not cause abstinence behavior. To the contrary, teens in states that prescribe more abstinence education are actually more likely to become pregnant. But damn the science.
So she's pretending, is what it is. She's pretending this works. She's pretending that abstinence only education has, it contributes to abstinence, and it doesn't. So if she wants to teach, pretend, she should be a drama teacher. She should not try to teach abstinence only education.
And granted, yes.
It turns out we're still humans, and we like to have sex.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate for us, and it's uncomfortable if you're a parent, that puberty starts at 12/13, right? And so if you're like, it's way too early, they're kids. That's true, that's why we try to shelter them. So I get the impulse, I understand that. But it turns out that once you go into puberty, you wanna have sex.
Yeah.
So now, that doesn't mean that we should encourage them to go rush out and do it as soon as they hit puberty, of course not. But it also means that if we're being realistic, we know that some percentage of people from puberty to adulthood are going to have sex. So when they do, we don't want them getting pregnant. So we're gonna have to do some sort of balancing act here with education about why you shouldn't have sex early, you know, about maturity and everything else, and know that they're humans. And make sure that they don't get pregnant. By the way, what the results of this is that abortions will increase. Because more people will get pregnant and more people will have abortions. There's been study after study, it's a fact. So, but if you don't believe us, that's okay. You'll see it for yourself in a little while. Yeah. And then you'll cry about more abortions, but we didn't do it, you did it.
If we could bring up this chart, you're gonna see that there has actually been, the next graphic, there's been some success in getting down the birth rate for females between 15 and 19. Obviously there it's broken down by race, but you're seeing that all of them are descending, some precipitously, and that's just over less than a decade. I mean, do we wanna see that chart go in the opposite direction? Do we wanna think about the cost in human suffering, perhaps it could come, those who won't be able to pursue advanced degrees or start their own business, you know, the extra abortions, as Cenk pointed out. I mean, we could move back in that direction. We experienced that as a country under George W. Bush. I personally don't think that we should.
Look, it's super uncomfortable to think of 15-year-olds having sex, but you just saw the chart. Obviously, some of them do, and they get pregnant. So you can deny that reality until you're blue in the face. It doesn't make it any less real.
Yeah.
So let's just be smart about it for a second and figure out how we can prevent the pregnancies. So if you wanna keep insisting on old programs that we know for a fact don't work, yeah, you can go in there and just do the same thing you've done before. Don't have sex, just say no. See how that turns out. On this planet, that strategy has not been very successful.
And yeah, just how quickly it's happened. It was like a month ago that she was appointed. Mm-hmm. And already this is in place.
You can just evaporate hundreds of millions of dollars in funding.
Yep.
But it was good of the Obama administration to set those up in the first place. They did a good, I guess, a good job for a couple of years at the very least. Okay, why don't we turn to something a little bit different? Movies and TV shows have taught us to fear robots harming us, but perhaps we should have been a little bit more worried about them harming themselves. Mm. And I'm gonna reveal what I mean there, but first I wanna show you a robot that we should be concerned about. If you bring this up, you're gonna see the Nightscope K5, who looks like an elongated pointy R2-D2. But you might actually find him in a variety of locations around the US doing sort of patrol work and light guard duty at office parks and malls and things like that. It's an advanced robot. Okay, the Nightscope K5 has a 360-degree video camera array, sensitive microphones, air quality sensors, thermal imaging capabilities, can scan up to 1,500 car number plates per minute, which is a little bit scary. And the microphones can detect gunshots and other notable sounds, probably also record your conversations, so have fun with that next time you see one. But for all those capabilities, all the interesting sensing it has and the job that it can perform, have we really like taken a good amount of concern for its mental state? Because somebody found this this morning, this photo.
No!
What have you done?
The Nightscope K5? had driven itself into a shallow pond. And it just floats there, an indictment for all of us. We use these robots as robotic slaves, effectively. But what do they want? What
swim.
Do they want?
They want to swim.
Let's bring up this next tweet. You're going to see, I think this is the guy that originally actually tweeted about it. It's a fun day here at GMMB. The super high tech security robot at our office complex has had a mishap. If you bring up the next one, you're going to see a really depressing shot. Yeah. It's okay, security robot. It's a stressful job. We've all been there.
He's not getting paid enough. He had to go and collect the change in the fountain.
Guy. He can't right himself. He just has wheels on the bottom. Once he started going down those steps, he was a goner.
What a great design then.
Yeah,
they recovered his tape, and at the end it said the last thing recorded was, "I can't live in a world where Trump is president."
No,
he took himself out.
Yeah,
this poor robot.
One of these ran over a kid.
Yeah,
at the Stanford Shopping Center.
Bring this next graphic up. Accidentally ran over a child, called a freakish accident, and in April a drunk man beat one up.
First of all, I get
to be fair, he beat the crap out of that robot.
But he was very tough.
It's 300 pounds. It ran over a kid's foot.
Yeah, that's pretty scary, actually. Yeah. Look, you're going to see these more and more because it's the sorts of jobs where theoretically they're going to figure out, you know, if we have a robot instead of a human, after 2 years, it pays for itself, that sort of thing. These are only going to become more common. And there are concerns both in terms of running over children, suicide on the job, which is depressing for people who would see it. But also, it's gotta be a privacy concern. It's just 360 hearing and sight, constantly recording data. If you have multiple of those going around, that's worrying.
Yeah, I don't
think
like
about
that
the advertisers, how much they'd love to hear your conversations as you walk around and shop in a mall.
Yeah.
Oh, they're definitely gonna be doing data mining of that. There's no question about that. And
all it wants to do is learn to love.
But it couldn't learn to love itself.
So by the way, you mentioned that it had that it was depressed because it has low wages. It's actually literally true. They are paying $7 per hour to the company, of course, that built it, right? To have the robots go around. Because a person would cost $7.25 an hour. Okay. Now, if you want to jump in a lake, that's the really depressing part. The national minimum wage is $7.25, but they've created these robots because they cost a quarter of a dollar per hour less than you do. Ugh, that's depressing.
Don't worry, man. I looked into the Knightscope K5 and they can't yet break down the news. So I think we're gonna be okay for a little while.
One day you come on here.
John's never heard of a bot.
One day we come on here and there's a there's some sort of, looks kind of a little clannish, but anyway,
a little bit.
A clannish R2-D2. Can I see the first picture? Okay, I'm surprised nobody made that comment before. And of course, I'm kidding, guys. Just calm down.
It looks cute, I think.
Yeah, it's a cute clan robot. Anyway, and he's
R2-KKK.
And you turn on the Young Turks, he's sitting here going, "We are going to have an awesome show for you tonight. I know what you are thinking. What is this?" Oh, you know what you're going to say?
What?
Of course. Okay, last story.
Initiating elbow drop. Okay, this is fun, but a little bit serious. One of the silent but deadly threats when it comes to climate change are cow farts. If you care a lot about climate change, you're probably well aware of this. A lot of good documentaries have covered how the agriculture business, for a variety of reasons, generates a lot of climate the change, like particulate matter, chemicals, and stuff like that. But the methane from cow farts is a big part of that, especially once you add it up. So let's look at some of these numbers that these cows are generating. They're estimated to be between 1.3 and 1.5 billion cows in the world, which is not actually the highest. Chickens are actually more common, but that's a lot of cows. Each cow produces between 200 to 500 liters of methane per day. And methane warms the planet by around 86 times as much as CO2 over a long period of time. Estimates differ, but that is a commonly cited one. So when you think about those 1.5 billion cows belching and farting out all that methane, that's a significant concern. But what if there's something we could do about it? Well, it's been last year the news broke that they'd found a way to try to limit that methane production by cows. It's been put into effect most recently in some Irish farms that have confirmed that it actually works. Researchers at James Cook University found the addition of less than 2% dried seaweed to a cow's diet could reduce their methane emissions by as much as 99%.
Get me some of that.
Huge, and it doesn't seem like it would be that difficult to add it. One of the professors involved in this said that we started with 20 species of seaweed and we very quickly narrowed that down to one really stands out species of red seaweed that when added as just a small percentage of the feed will significantly cut the output.
That's huge. Back in the 90s, there was an episode of Sequest DSV where they mentioned like, that's why we banned cows. It took place in the future when the ice caps had melted or something like that. And they had, a pet talking dolphin. But anyways, it was a science fiction show that was like, look back on the ravages of climate change and said, yeah, we had to ban cows because the farts were too intense. This is great. This avoids such a huge part of it for anyone who's seen Cowspiracy and then tweeted me about it.
Mm-hmm. and so look, I'm gonna get back to the ice caps and climate change in a second, but if you are a vegetarian or you are vegan or you just love animals because animals are innocent, you'll also love this news, not just for the sake of the planet, but for them, because it turns out that it also makes the cows healthier and a longer mating cycle.
Ooh, I love that.
Okay.
But I don't think that's due to the food. I think it's that the cows are more turned on with the less farting involved.
I would
cut the season short too.
Yeah, like, oh, methane. Okay, maybe he's not so bad. Like, oh, for Christ's sake, I'm gonna move to this.
I love it. It was a Canadian farmer who's like, why are those ones doing it for longer? I'm gonna watch what they eat.
Well, it turns out that's actually literally true. That happened in 2012. That Canadian farmer noticed that was happening. They're like, what is going on? And it was because there was some wind-blown seaweed that had gotten to that pasture, which is amazing. It's like out of one of those movies where it like rains fish because a tornado picked up fish and threw it on land or whatever.
Or sharks, I saw that one.
Yeah. So just randomly seaweed got thrown into this farm, the cows ate it. And it turns out they farted less, they burped less, they had sex more often, and the Irish actually have been using seaweed for a while, so they've been harvesting seaweed to fertilize small holdings because that were poor in nutrients. So once you put all this together, they're like, wait a minute, it's the seaweed.
What? And then they say the daily, I love that quote you read, like the daily leakage of methane of 200 to 500 liters. Why is it the liters? Is it measuring farts in liters that makes it grosser?
It doesn't help, I guess.
I hate that. I feel like
who had that job to measure? Like, how many liters again, Bob? Oh, come on, man.
Is it a metric thing, or is it like, can we do like cubic feet?
We could
gross,
convert it if
gross.
It makes you feel better. But anyway, very significant. Obviously, not the only way that large amounts of methane are emitted. We have concerns with fracking, obviously, and things like that. Thankfully. Under Obama, there were some new regulations. There's an ongoing legal battle under Donald Trump about the continuation of those. But theoretically, if this was set up on a mass scale, which seems eminently doable, that could cut fairly significantly into global emissions. And at this point, anything helps.
Yeah, and so look, if the scientists had a global conspiracy to trick you so that we stop using oil, why they launched that conspiracy, no one really knows. Well, then why do they admit that the cow farts that have nothing to do with oil or anything else are 86 times worse than carbon emissions? Well, because they just care about the facts, and that's a fact.
Yeah.
So it's not part of any agenda. There's no like liberal plot to demonize cows. It's not it's not a bunch of Hindu scientists didn't get together and be like, I have an idea. Methane is actually much worse than carbon, it is. But by the way, the real problem comes in when the ice caps melt. Well, it releases ton of methane, actually literally more than a ton, I would imagine.
That wouldn't be that much.
Yeah, it releases way more than that. And that is 86 times worse than carbon, so we cannot have the ice caps melt. But luckily, we protect the ice caps a little bit now because of seaweed. Is there anything that
seaweed can't do?
That weed can't do.
Yeah.
Come and see weed.
cure my cough, apparently, anyway, is one of those things.
Possibly. Okay, okay, that's all we got.
Okay, we do have more stories for you in the post game, including who did Steve Bannon call? Now, he called this not of a Democrat, you wouldn't be surprised by that, by a Republican. Which Republican did he call a limp dick motherfucker?
You didn't get to that on the show.
I didn't.
Oh,
I
how did not?
Because it was too long. I can't. Okay, so anyway, we'll do it in the post game. TYTnetwork.com/join. Free TYT is the promo code. Bye bye.